Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant. This is Big R, Ronald J. Martin. The reason why you're not hearing Big T is because I'm actually hosting the program today, and I'm going to be asking Big T some questions. And Big T, you're there. You want to say hi to our devoted listeners?
Baby, I'm here, and it's so good to be here in the studio.
How does it feel?
And hello to our devoted listeners.
How does it feel not hosting? Does it feel awkward to you right now? Is there something off about it to you? Or are you just relishing?
Baby, it's a little off.
Okay.
It's a little awkward, but I tell you, I'm kind of relishing the lack of responsibility. You know what I mean? I can just kind of sit back and enjoy this.
Well,
thing,
it is
baby.
Just such a.
Well, you got us through it.
It's such a major hat that you wear on this program. I mean, it's.
Mm.
I mean, it's. We're not just talking about like a normal level of responsibility here. We are. This thing goes way wide.
Baby, listen to me, though. I don't want you to think of this as a burden, okay? I do it joyfully because I'm a pro. And we're performers. We're in show business. We get out of bed in the morning ready to,
absolutely.
To do things like this. And I know, baby, I know you feel comfortable on that side of the table.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, this is old hat to
old
you.
Hat.
This is old, yeah, old hipster yarn hat to you.
Yeah, it is. And I appreciate that encouragement because this does bring us back to an earlier show that we did back in the day. I think we had our last, we had our last show on November 3rd, 2011. It was a show called The Reformatory. I know we liked.
Baby, you remember the actual date?
I know we like to pitch that show whenever we get an opportunity.
We really do.
Because there's some level
and you know what?
There's some level of nostalgia about that. I think there's something about that show that we're still kind of sad about.
Baby, you know what? The diehard fans, though, have been riding with us since the Reformatory.
Absolutely.
And I bet there are listeners out there with, you know, Reformatory swag in their basements, you know, just things, little artifacts, little things tucked
away. Oh,
all
the products.
To remember
all the products that we had manufactured.
Products, all the merch, you know, yeah, all the merch deals that we had signed, you know, in the business.
Truthfully, both of us are still living off of a lot of that right now, if we're just going to be honest with our
dude,
audience.
We are. I mean, yeah, all the residuals.
Oh.
You know, I don't want to bore people with the business.
It gets a little braggadocious. It gets a little braggadocious.
It really does. It really does.
But hey, I want to.
A good run.
Yeah, it was a good run. And I want to, by the way, B Pipe is not with us. He just decided that today was not a day that was good for him to record and spend time with us, his friends. Wow. And I don't know how you feel about that, but you know, I'm not going to make a big deal about it. I don't want to say anything bad about B Pipe. But maybe we should talk about that a little bit and why it was good for him on this Wednesday, Thursday afternoon, not to join us on the podcast.
Baby, you know what? We have this saying in the football community: "Next man up." And it's like, when somebody goes down with some horrific injury, like you don't stand around and cry about it. Like you just grab another guy and go, and you know, not to like impugn the memory of Pipe, but I mean that's really what we're doing on
this
program.
It's like
we have radio to make.
It's like he's an injured co-host to us right now. I mean
he's an injured co-host, and we've just moved the drill a few yards down the field while he lays there. And
I have no idea what you just meant, but I think the equiv is that he's not here, and we are made now to pick up the pieces of the brokenness that exists in the absence of Pipe. And
dude, we are. And one of the pieces of brokenness is that, you know, Piper is our promo guy.
I know.
He's our promotional guru. He's the business guy on the podcast. And I feel like today that responsibility has fallen on my shoulders.
It has.
So Ron, I want to tell you about a product that
I've
been
loving. Yeah, tell me what you got, baby.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's called Lagaris Roasters
Interesting.
Coffee. And it's incredible because what happens is when you buy Lagaris Roasters coffee, they send you a bag of beans, and then you grind them, you put them into a coffee maker with some water, the whole thing heats up, and then, minutes later, you've got the most delicious cup of Lagaris Roasters Happy Rant signature blend coffee that you will ever, ever taste in your life. It is wonderful stuff, and Lagaris has just finished, they've just inked a high-level business deal with us. We've kind of amended our contract, so to speak.
Mm.
And they are running a promotion. They're running a special holiday promotion at LagarisRoasters.com. So when you check out, when you enter the words HAPPY20, so HAPPY20, HAPPY20, for a 20% discount on all your Lagaris Roasters products, coffees, teas. But the only one you're going to want to get really is the Happy Rant Signature Blend. That's the one with our logo on it. And it's the only coffee I ever drink, baby. It's a wonderful product. I'm so happy to be In business, I'm happy to be a coffee tycoon with Hector Lagares. You have no idea. I mean, you do have an idea. The listeners, I guess, have no idea how that feels to roll out of bed in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror and go, you know what? I'm in the coffee business.
Yeah,
I'm a coffee tycoon.
They have really not a lot of conception of what that must feel like to somebody like yourself. But
that's amazing.
But baby, you know what? I appreciate that promo, and it makes me a little nostalgic for B Pipe, knowing that he is the promo king. Mm. But I got to tell you, I think you just pulled it off. I think people are on the Lagares Roaster site now, clicking off some new coffee purchases because that was not a Pipe A plus promo.
It's not a Pipe level,
right?
No,
I'm going to give it a solid B plus, A minus.
Yeah.
It was good.
You know what they called him back in Minneapolis on the streets? They called him the promo kid.
The promo kid. That's right. Now he's the promo king.
Yeah.
But back then he was the promo kid who wrote a book called the Pastor's Kid, right? Is it something like that?
The Pastor's Promo Kid. That was kind of the working title.
Yeah, that was the working, yeah. Right. That's good. Well, baby, I'm excited today because this always brings back a lot of nostalgia. It's Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in a very nostalgic mood as I get around this time, as our listeners know. I just want to be, can't I just be the Christmas guy, I think is what I brought up in the last
Ronnie Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Father Christmas. That's right.
So
we're angling for that for you as a career move. Have you gotten any like reach out from the Christian publishing community, the Star Makers? Has anyone been in contact with you about
unfortunately,
becoming the official Christmas face of Evangelical?
I have not gotten any offers, any firm offers. Mm. I'm hoping to get at least some meetings on the table. I'm hoping that's kind of what I'm hoping our boy B Pipe is doing right now, since he's not with us. I hope
he's
doing some work.
He's finishing up a deal right now. Yeah.
That's the hope. That's the hope.
Yeah. That's how I prefer to think of it.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that's what he's doing.
But having said that, you know, going back to nostalgia, I'm thinking about some of our early days when we had our own program called The Reformatory. And I'm thinking actually more specifically, baby, about some of the ways that we kind of came in contact with one another. And something we were talking about off the air, it was interesting that what most people don't know is that when me and you met, and you had just finished, writing a couple of books with this lesser known, author that we sometimes mention on the program. I can't frankly remember his name at this point, but
nice kid.
You know, he was a nice kid.
He's going to go far.
He gave it a good college try with those titles, but you were the one that actually, emerged from that and ended up, prolonging your career a little bit. But I remember when we first...
Well, I mean, who's hosting the Happy Rant right now? It's not him.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
I mean, it's actually you today. It's not even you. But,
I know. So I'm living out a...
He's not even on the...
Program. Living out a dream right now, hosting the rant. But I was thinking about... Absolutely. It was interesting because I was thinking about a couple of different things here. And I was thinking about when we first connected, both of us were sort of in transition. And we were... Mm. I was stepping into pastoral ministry. You had written a couple of books. You were you'd become an adjunct professor, and both of us, things were sort of stirring in the pots of our lives in ways that we really couldn't anticipate what was next. Although some of that groundwork was being laid, so what I thought was that I wanted to talk to you, baby, about this idea of dreams, and given just sort of the season that we're in and the high nostalgia of the season we're in, being that it's Christmas, I want to talk to you a little bit about what your life was like in some of your early years, what you thought you were going to do, the direction you thought your life was going to be going in, and then sort of some of the ways that materialized, some of the ways that didn't materialize. And so I want to get sort of the storyline of Big T today. I want our listeners to get a sense of where you came from, where you ended up, and then to talk about some of the things that both of us have talked about in private, which is some of the disappointments that come along with realizing certain things, not realizing other things, and then how it just seems like life morphs into a place that you were never anticipating, and then what that's like trying to deal with it as you get into middle age and you look back and you still wonder maybe what might have been. Mm-hmm. You know, so take us through an early trip through Big T's life and some of the things that, and you thought, some places you thought you were going and that maybe you dipped your toe in and then ended up being different later. But what were some of those early dreams and ambitions?
Yeah, baby. So I have to tell you, great question, by the way. When I was a kid, like, I was a full-time dreamer. Mm. And I, you know, all kidding aside, all like ironic haha stuff aside, that's the single biggest thing that I miss about being young. Mm. I miss the dreaming, you know, because it was really, really fun to imagine, you know, all these different scenarios and all these things happening. And that's not to say that I'm in any way dissatisfied with my life now. I mean, I'm really exceedingly grateful for where the Lord's put us here in Jackson, Tennessee, and working at Union and still writing and doing the show and, you know, all the other things. But yeah, when I was a kid, I think that just the sense of like life being this wide open blank canvas. And I used to literally, like, one of my favorite things to do. So my pops was a football player and a football coach when I was young. And he had in his closet, like way back in the back corner, he had like some of his old jerseys from college. And I would get out, this is when I was like, you know, first grade or whatever, I would get out these jerseys and I would lay them on the floor and I'd literally just sit in this rocking chair and listen to music and like dream about being a football player like Pop.
Nice, baby.
You know?
Nice.
And it was like, yeah, it was like the funnest thing to do, you know? So when I get nostalgic, I often get nostalgic for stuff like that. Not even so much the activity, but just the way it felt. You know what I mean?
Because baby, let me insert something here, because you said something really important. Yeah. And this is where I feel like we have a lot of commonality, because at the end of the day, what you best remember about the things you wanted to do was the wanting to do them even more than the doing of them, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And, yeah, that's so true. And I mean, honestly, I got to do a lot of them.
Right.
You know, I got to play a little college football and I got to play some after college. And, you know, by God's grace, he's allowed me to, you know, be able to taste a little bit of what I dreamed about back then, although he definitely like disabused me of the idol of football and even the idol of my dreams, to be honest. Because I think, you know, for me, dreaming, planning, chasing, you know, going after things, a lot of that big R was about my own vanity.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, there was a lot of vanity, there was a lot of selfish conceit and vain ambition in a lot of those dreams. So while at one level I miss how fun they were, on another level I don't miss, you know, the arrogance and the self-centeredness and just kind of the, you know, the, just that whole motif, you know, and how off-putting that must have been to other people in my life. So I'm thankful the Lord broke me of some of those idols, but I do miss, you know, I miss the vastness of the possibilities, I guess, if that's a way to
say
it. But yeah, where I grew up, man, nobody really read. It was a very blue-collar, rough little town in East Central Indiana. Very blue-collar. It's really taken a dive in the last 20 years, just as a lot of the industry has gone overseas. I mean, the town is really like a welfare state now. But yeah, I mean, back then, nobody really read, nobody really wrote, nobody really cared about school. So the whole idea of like writing vocationally, teaching at a college, I mean, these were all not even a flicker in my eye back then. I mean, I could have never envisioned the life that that the Lord had for me in the future.
Yeah.
And yeah, just super thankful for it, man. It's been better than I could have imagined, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a great point. I appreciate the optimism too, because I think what happens is that we can, I mean, I know that I have the tendency to rose color a lot of things, you know, when I look in the past.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so interesting how you mentioned this idea of, you know, being able to dream about the future. Here's my question for you: as you've gotten older, as you've hit your 40s, do you find it harder to, in a healthy way, at least, dream about the future, since now there's a sense where your future is a little more set and locked down than it used to be. And does that make some things, do you become disillusioned a little more quicker now as the result of that at times?
Dude, it's funny. It's actually the opposite, in that, so to answer your first question, no, I don't dream anymore. You know, I really don't have these experiences where I'm driving around in the car, listening to music, dreaming up the next thing, loading it up with all these huge expectations, because I think that's what was kind of part and parcel with the big dreams, was also like I had huge expectations you know, the next trip, the next book deal, the next whatever. And then invariably something about the experience would like fail to live up to the dream. And then I would get disillusioned. So yeah, I think the positive byproduct of not dreaming a whole lot anymore is, you know, I'm less up and down. I think I'm a little more even keel emotionally, which is like another by God's grace thing, you know, because that wasn't always the case. I used to be real up and down, but I think the last big dreaming moment, and I'm sitting here in my office looking at a poster from this. So like 5 or 6 years ago, over one winter, KK and I and the kids moved to France for a little while. Yeah. So I could play and coach football over there. And that was kind of the last big dream type adventure. You know, that was one that I had been scheming up for like a year and a half before it popped. And that one, again, by God's grace, it was beautiful, man. It was like a dream, you know, being over there with her, with the boys, having been through already some rough stuff in our lives and in our marriage. And France just felt like it felt like the last big adventure, you know, it felt like the last, you know, kind of hurrah from our childhood. And then shortly after that, I got this job and, have kind of settled down, you know, and there are no kind of huge grand adventures on the horizon, but that's okay, man. It's definitely okay.
Yeah, explain to our listeners, we used to talk about this a lot back in the old days, and we used to talk about some of the angst and some of the disappointment. And so obviously we have listeners that are coming from all these different ages, different life stages, different seasons. We probably have a lot of like early married couples that are sort of battling early parenthood and, you know, early career development and all those kinds of things. So you get,
which is no picnic, but you get
a little further beyond that and you do sort of experience a little bit of settledness. You have a little bit more of a realistic take on the world. But at the same time, some of the early angst and disappointments you have, they can easily make you cynical, right? About being afraid to dream too far into the future because you don't want to experience that disappointment. So you kind of develop and opt out into this sense of cynicism. And we see that, at least I see that with a lot of guys that are our age, where they've sort of settled into this groove that doesn't even allow God to maybe surprise them anymore. How do we guard against that?
Dude, I definitely used to be like that. So like cynicism was a huge sin deal for me early in the writing career because, you know, I was arrogant. I probably had an overinflated sense of how good I actually was. So as a result of that, like I had these huge expectations of my career going in a certain way. And now as I look back on it, like, dude, the career has been way better than what I've deserved, you know, in every way. But back then I thought I deserve more and I'm cynical because things haven't broken the way I've wanted them to break. I was resentful of other people. And honest to gosh, man, this is not it's not a sexy or nuanced answer. But the answer to that for me was like confessing it out loud and apologizing to a whole bunch of people, which was really awkward and painful.
Yeah.
But it's been the very thing that's been a check against falling into that again. And so kind of concurrent with that, like repentance moment, I think it's just a lot of prayer. And what you pray for is, Lord, give me eyes to see the good things, the blessings, the gifts, and guard my heart against, you know, becoming like the old me, you know, the old cynical me from 10 years ago, which was like really not fun for me and not fun for the other people in my life, you know? So I do feel fully forgiven for that, but I also still have massive regret over it that I think acts as a little bit of a hedge against it happening again.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think you bring up this really interesting point that I've been actually thinking a lot about. And I think one of the things that getting older does is it sort of, it can, it doesn't always have to do this, but again, by God's grace, and if you do become somebody who is a little more reflective and a little more, you become a little more self-aware of your sin. One of the things mm-hmm. that God does, it seems to do as we become more sanctified, is he gives us this like ever increasing level of thankfulness for the things that we do have. Because again, youthful exuberance, what's included in that is like this sense of entitlement, right? Like I didn't get everything I wanted, and the things I did get were not exactly how I wanted them. So therefore, I'm going to walk around with a chip on my shoulder. And then as you get older, you look around you, or you look behind you, and you start to think, you start to see yourself for who you really are, which is like, dude, I'm not the most talented guy that ever walked the face of the earth. So given even what I have is almost phenomenal that I even have what I have.
Oh, it is, right? Dude. Dude, it is. It's mind-blowing, man. And for me, like, every time I go back to my hometown, I drive by my high school, and sometimes I even go in.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go and watch a basketball game or watch a football game or whatever, and I just think there were 100 people in my graduating class who deserve this more than me. You know, who like, studied harder, loved reading more than me. Just really good, gifted people, and for some reason the Lord has let me do all this. But it's funny, man. Like, we definitely like play at being cynical on the show, and we have ha-has about it. But like, by God's grace, I'm really happy for, you know, friends of mine in the industry who are getting to do stuff, and it's just so much better to live that way.
Absolutely.
You know, whereas a decade ago I was low-key resentful when like friends would friends would pop in the industry and their books would get published or whatever. So this is a much better way to live, and I regret that it took me so long to get here, but I'm glad for it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, having known you for what has it been 8 years now, I mean, I can sense that sort of emanates from you now. And I hope it does from me as well, to where we're,
we
can actually have like attitudes and hearts that are a little more celebratory of not just one another, because I've always been happy for you for anything that's popped for you.
For
but even looking out, which is one of the things that we used to do all the time as a way that we connected, as a way that was funny for us.
Because
what we like doing, and what people probably don't know, or they get a sense of it from the broadcast, is that we really like doing commentary on other people, especially people who are doing the same things as us, but have either achieved a different kind of success or more success. And so we love sort of like talking for hours upon hours about things that other people are doing that are so close to what we're doing, but in a different way. We dig that, right?
Well, dude, it's our industry's brand of like water cooler gossip. You know what I mean? And for two guys who are basically like somewhat independent and like hermity, you know, when we met each other, we were both freelance. You know, we were both like, you know, in our little respective silos, like making our stuff. And, you know, to be able to come together and like chop it up about guys in our industry, like many of whom I've never even met in person, you know, it's just funny. It's a release, you know. It's funny to get together and have some ha-has over, you know, this person or that person's online presence or their last book or whatever. And I don't think it was done out of a place of mean-spiritedness, but it's just kind of a release, you know, because you're going through all this stuff in private as a writer. It's good to get with somebody else who understands a little bit of what that grind is like, and dealing with editors and dealing with publishers and just the uniqueness of that. It's nice to know other people who have been through it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that really connected us too, was that, man, we've had just countless hours of like good times together. Just being able to look at the seriousness of, you know, you look at sort of the scene or the tribe that we're in, which is obviously, you know, this reformed end of things, which again, what people don't seem to understand is the reason, you know, what we're doing when we're making fun of a lot of these guys is we're making fun of ourselves, because we are squarely in it.
Yeah.
And that makes it all the more funny, because we're not saying we're not saying that we're on the outside of it looking in going, hey, you guys need to change, or this is ridiculous. So we're associating ourselves with it, saying, no, it's ridiculous, as are we. Right. And one of the things we love doing is we love sort of stepping back, at least in the tribe, and going, oh my gosh, like some of these things that characterize it and some of the ways that people aren't able to like laugh at themselves is so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. And so
that's how we started,
just sort of like our brand of haha was just to look at some of these things and go, wait, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And when you looked at me, I was like, baby, I'm seeing it. Are you seeing it? And you're like, I am. And we were kind of like, no way. Like, we're both seeing this.
Dude, and honestly, I think back then, like 10 years ago or whenever that was, like our tribe needed that. Like, nobody was doing that. Everybody was just like super serious, super earnest, super self-congratulatory. Like super like, hey, I've got theology figured out. Everybody listen to me. And it was off-putting. It was so distasteful. So to find like somebody else who rolled that way theologically, which we do, like I still, to this day, roll that way theologically, but you know, it's been really healthy, I think. And you and I have kind of, you know, via this show, but also via some of our writing, like carved out a little bit of a niche in the marketplace, hopefully as being guys who can take a look at Reformedom and laugh at it from time to time. Because, man, I tell you, there's no shortage of things to laugh at. Even I thought of you the other night, man. We were at our church, which we love, man. We absolutely love our church. And every year they do this this thing, like this Christmas deal. You would love it, actually. Yeah. So there's this dude in Nashville named Andrew Peterson. And he writes like novels about like gremlins and warlocks and I don't know, like sort of C.S. Lewis-y type stuff or whatever. But he wrote this like Christmas musical called Behold the Lamb.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
And everybody down here, man, they all go crazy about Behold the Lamb and they all want to go see like him do it at the Ryman in Nashville or whatever. But our church does it. You know, they do Behold the Lamb every Christmas. And the guy who does it from our church is like one of my best friends down here. He's a great dude, super talented musician, and he always does an amazing job, but I was busting his chops the other day because before Behold the Lamb, so it's Sunday night, so you've already been through like the 2 hours of church in the morning.
Right.
And so everybody like piles back into the church on Sunday night, and you know, I'm expecting to just sit down and be entertained and have this great concert. Dude, but before that, we had to do the obligatory like stand there for 15 minutes and sing the three hymns together at a dirge pace, you know? So we had to do the three dirgy, like reformed hymns
before the performance,
before we could sit down and like relax like a gentleman and hear the performance. And I was just like, I don't get it.
Cause baby, we can never just go to a church event and just have it begin. We always have to sing.
No. Yeah. No, it can't just start.
Like nothing can ever start.
The concert. Nothing can ever start.
Dude, it's amazing.
Like, we've got to preface it.
It's amazing church services ever end, since technically they never start.
Dude, seriously, we got to preface it by standing for 15 minutes, bare men.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's funny, man. And so my kids go to this school, this classical school, that's kind of like helmed by humorless reformed guys, kind of run the
absolutely.
Place or whatever.
I would expect nothing less.
So exactly. So they took the kids to this Christmas concert on our campus. It was like a field trip. And apparently when they got back to school, like one of the teachers spent like a half hour deconstructing like everything that was wrong about the concert and why it wasn't serious enough.
Wow.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh, man, let's just take the fun out of everything. Why don't we, you know? But that's reformed them. That's reformed them in a nutshell. And yeah, baby, when I met you, it was a really fun moment of like finding somebody else who had like the equipment to laugh about it. Yeah.
Baby, here's my question to you. If there was one thing, and maybe you just answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If there was one thing, when you back up and you sort of look at the state of Reformedom right now, I have a couple questions for you. And maybe these are too broad, but you can answer the best you can. So
baby, they're going
to
be great.
When you step back and you look at the state of Reformedom, I want you to give a bit of a hot take on just kind of on kind of what you're thinking right now. You know, it's really leveled out, you know, terms of, you know, sort of that, just that hyper conference scene we saw 6 or 7 years ago, that's leveled out a little bit, even though there's a lot of conferences, but you know, even the, you know, when I talk to guys and a lot of pastors, man, nobody's going to every one of these things anymore. Everybody's kind of pulled back on a lot of this stuff. And, the place where you see Reformedom is at, and where it's going. And then secondly, what are some things, you know, given, you know, you writing emergent 10 years ago, mm-hmm. coming up to the 10-year anniversary mm-hmm. probably of that, and just some of the mm-hmm. trends that you just notice, whether it's on purpose because you've done some research, or just some things that are like impressionistic to you. What do you think would be something that you, if you could sit at a TGC council meeting, what would you suggest? what would be like one or two suggestions in moving this whole tribe and this movement forward in some healthy way? So where do you think it's at now? And what would be a couple things where you'd say, guys, I just really think we need to progress into this particular area.
Baby, I would never sit at a TGC council meeting. You know that. I'd be busy like eBaying like football jerseys on my phone at that time. But no, that's good, man. And wow, are you going to be involved in any of the pageantry for the 10-year anniversary of Why We're Not Emergent? I mean, do you know about like a parade or anything there in A-Town that they're going to do to commemorate?
Yeah, I mean, they actually just asked me if I'd like to put something together. So we're having a lot of talks about that. It's a lot of high level stuff. I mean, it would
mean a lot to me if you would show out for something.
Oh, absolutely. Like that. I mean, I wouldn't even.
But no, good questions, baby. Good serious questions. And I mean, to the first one. Okay, so here's kind of where I see it going. And we're like, how deep are we into the reform movement? Like a decade of this being like a brand?
Yeah, the new reform movement. Yeah, I mean, dude, we're at least 12, 13 years. We're over a decade into it.
Yeah, I was going to say 10 to 15 years of it being like its own brand. And dude, here's where I see kind of a shift taking place. So for me, you know, 5-8 years ago, reformed people were like the apex mountain of smugness. Like if you wanted to find a smug person, like you would go to a PCA church or like a Reformed Baptist church or whatever 5 to 8 years ago, and you were just swimming in smugness, you know, and self-satisfied kind of, we've got this figured out. And it's funny where I feel like smugness is migrating from the Reformed church to like the Anglican church.
Wow.
So I feel like it going that way. And this is a good development for us, right? I mean, I think for our tribe, disabusing ourselves of some of that smugness and some of that sense of, you know, we've got this whole thing figured out, like that's been a good development. Mm. And that was distasteful. And it was, you know, not a thing that I don't think you and I were never excited about that part of the movement. So, but I sense that going to sort of like a, you know, a smells and bells kind of high church sensory. Like we got a church here in town that's like really popping, you know, and it's popping with all the people who had that, like, I'm a Christian, but .. sort of motif, you know, I'm a Christian, but here are like 9 ways in which I'm too cool for Christianity.
Right.
You know, that's kind of shifting across the street more in that direction. And,
because it's more of like this, we want it to be more high church and the robes and all the kind of the
dude, it's high church and it tends to kind of lean left politically, right. Which, you know, kind of at this point in our culture goes hand in hand with just sort of that anti feeling or whatever. So, I don't know. I mean, I think keeping the theology but losing the smugness is going to be a really good development for our tribe, and I guess that's it. That's the hot take, you know. So, and I don't know what that means for the business side of the tribe. Like, I don't know if the conference circuit continues to get smaller. For your sake, I hope it doesn't, baby. I hope you've got a full schedule, full slate of conferences to go to every year if you want.
I appreciate the concern.
But
that's nice.
Yeah, no problem, baby. No problem. We really should have our own conf. I mean, the Happy Rant should have a. We shouldn't just do a live event. It should be a conference.
We've talked about that many times. I know we've talked about.
Yeah,
that
there needs to be a hotel involved. Absolutely. There needs to be some food. It's got to be the whole.
Yeah, we'll continue to suss that out, baby. I mean, we're not precluding that ever. It's just a matter of timing and what thematically where we want to go with the conference, and you know, how are we going to separate ourselves from the multitude of conferences that are continuing to be invented every year.
Baby, here's what I would say though in the TGC like advisory board planning.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is even more hot takey than the last thing. I would encourage everybody to just take a year off of their personas. So no social media for a year, no blogging, no TGC articles, no persona work for a year. and just see like what happens in your life and in your ministry as a result.
Okay, baby, that's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I think the results would be positive, man. I don't know. I'm not like a prophet, but I think it would be really healthy for everybody to just take a big time out on persona.
Okay, here's a serious question that's not going to sound serious, but I want you to answer it as seriously as you can and think about it for like 4 seconds. What do you think would happen if everybody, all including you, all 125 people on Jared C's most influential reformed list, what do you think would happen if every one of them got together and committed to taking a 12-month sabbatical from social media? What do you think would happen in that 12 months if every one of those guys took that time off?
Dude, I honestly, all kidding aside, 0% snark or sarcasm in this answer. Like, I really think it would be a wonderful, like, life-changing,
it's a wonderful
ministry-shaping moment. It would be. Like, I think their churches would be better and healthier. Their families would be healthier. They'd spend more time with their wives. You know, these reform guys, man, they like to sire 12 children and then never see them. But, you know, I mean, I think it would give more margin and more time for rest. It would be healthier. I just think it would be way better. And I wish people would do it, to be honest.
Can you imagine all those Twitter updates from all these guys? Imagine those just like ceasing.
Dude, yeah. It's not hard for me to imagine because I don't see it.
Right, because you're already
great.
Off.
Like, yeah, I'm already off. But like, I don't know. Like, you would spend less time comparing yourself to other pastors and other speakers and other authors and, you know, less time having to curate and update. And it would be really good.
Baby, would you go so far?
I think it would be really good.
Would you go so far as to say, and again, now we're treading into some deep waters now. If that were to happen, if every one of those guys took a 12-month sabbat from social media, mm-hmm. Do you think that reformdom, as at least not in whole but in part, at least in the areas that those people are serving and having influence, do you think that we would see? Wait for it. Do you think we would see this idea of mission and evangelism sort of like increase a little bit?
Yeah,
or is that too broad?
Because I think it would free up. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. So, in the beginning of reformdom as a brand, I think the super hardcore kind of like straight edge reform folks were like low key disdainful of evangelism. And evangelism was sort of like, how many kids can you produce? Like, that's your evangelism, you know, like you've created 12 believers, you know, and as soon as you have them sprinkled when they're, you know, 7 days old, then they're,
cause you're describing Presbyterians, which are real reformed people.
Dude. Yeah. But the attitude was always kind of, you know, kind of smug and dismissive, I think, about evangelism. But I think, if we had all that time that we weren't devoting to image curation and we could devote it to just knowing people, you know, knowing our neighbors, knowing people in our communities, like getting involved in like even just one other thing, you know, if you took on like one new thing in your community and kind of used it to replace your social media life, I think the results could be amazing. I really do. And there would be fewer conferences, fewer books, and that's fine. Everything has been said before. You know, every book has been written. Everything has been said before. Like, it would be A-okay to just everybody step away for a year. I think it'd be awesome.
Baby, that's fascinating. Speaking of books that have already been written, what do you have in your pipeline of books you are writing right now that have already been written? Anything we can look forward to?
Yeah, dude, I've got three, actually. So wow. I've got a journalism textbook that I've written that I'm going to be using in all my classes in the spring.
Baby, suss that out a little bit. What is that? What's the title of it?
Yeah, dude, it's called Art and Formula.
Wow.
So the idea being that, like, half of journalism is formula. So you can learn to write a news story. You can learn to write a press release. You can learn to do all this kind of formulaic journalism stuff. And that's fine and that's important. And you can use that to be employable. But the greater half of journalism is art. And it's intangible things that you can't necessarily fully teach people. But so half the book is devoted to that stuff. The long interview, the personal essay, creative nonfiction, the stuff that really makes you special and kind of gives you a name or a brand in the writing game. Mm-hmm. So half the book is devoted to that. The other half is devoted to kind of the formulaic side. And I'm excited about it. The publisher is Kendall Hunt. They approached me a while ago about doing it, and I said yes. And I can tell you that it was the least fun writing project I've ever had. Like, writing a textbook is not super fun, but like,
not a lot of enjoyment.
I wanted to make it a fun read for my students, and I wanted to kind of de-textbook it a little bit. Like, the textbook racket is unbelievable in that the books are all like 200 pages longer than they need to be. They're completely insufferable in terms of actual readability. So
baby, I had a convo about that last night with some colleagues, and they asked me about some particular textbooks that I had to read.
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys, it is literally like torture trying to get through these things.
Dude, yeah, it's like taking a beating.
It is. It's like, right? if one of them even occasionally, I don't know, man, got crazy and told a story or had even like
the slightest flicker of humanity.
Just anything.
You know?
Yeah, anything. They feel like death.
Exactly.
They're like death every time. So
this is a funny story about the textbook. So I was working on it this summer. I was sitting in this little like cafe that we have on our campus, and a friend of mine walked in, and this friend is like, he's ex-military, he's kind of grizzled, but he's the head of like campus security at Union at our school. And he's like, hey, what are you working on? And I'm like, I'm doing this textbook for my journalism classes. And he looks at me and he goes, what are you doing that for? And I said, what do you mean? You know, I guess a valid question
if we're being honest, man.
Yeah, it is a really valid question. It kind of stopped me in my tracks. And I guess I was like, well, I don't know, like ego or so the kids could have a good textbook to use. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, academics hate everything. And I'm like, Judas, you're right.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah.
So this is the worst project because if there's one thing that professors can do, it's deconstruct things, and they do hate everything that isn't theirs. So I look forward to lots of hatred when the textbook comes out. So that's one thing, but I've got another super joyful one, super fun one. So I did this graphic novel with Harvest House last year called The Extraordinary Life of a Mediocre Jock. Little graphic novel intended for like middle school age readers. Mm-hmm. And they contracted me for another one. This one is called Theater Kid, so it's about theater. And,
baby, I can't wait to read that. Is this the total like typical like how we think of it, theater kid from high school kind of a thing?
Dude, totally, man, totally, yeah. And so my lady was in theater back in the day.
Double K.
She was a little theater hottie, so she kind of gave me some insight. And my kid Tristan, believe it or not, like the big strapping jock. Tristan was actually, he was the lead in a Shakespeare play last year at his school. So he goes to this super nerdy, you know, classical school, and they only ever do Shakespeare.
Of course.
Like they've had people like propose modern plays, and they always get like shot down by the board because it's always Shakespeare. And the deal with Shakespeare is you sit there for 2 hours, literally having no idea what the H is going on.
Oh, absolutely.
Like nobody knows.
Absolutely.
Nobody in the audience has a clue.
And they're probably doing them in Latin because they have to, because they're a classical school, right? So
So, and then you get to the end and either everybody dies or somebody gets married.
Of course.
And that's it, man. So,
which is what every classical school wants to happen to their students, die or get married.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, man, Theater Kid, it's on Harvest House. Tip of the cap to Harvest House. They're my favorite publisher of all time to work with. They've been phenomenal.
Baby, I'm working with them right now. And, they've been totally phenomenal. Yeah.
Dude, they're great, aren't they? They're nice
absolutely.
People. So, and the third project is another Harvest House project that we just put the finishing touches on. I'm going to be ghostwriting a book for Philadelphia Eagles tight end Zach Ertz.
Wow.
So this dude who plays for the Eagles, he caught the winning touchdown in their Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, Zach, one of my favorite dudes, for sure.
Yeah, one of your favorite players, man. One of your favorite players. So he's actually a great dude, really humble, and he's going to be awesome to work with. So that's going to be kind of a turn and burner, man. Kind of a really quick turnaround here in the month of January. So we'll be working on that together. But yeah, it's good, man. It's the Lord has been kind, and I'm really grateful to be still cranking these books out. And it's hard to walk away still. It's hard to say no to anything.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's just residual, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, but just like the the holdover from those days of being freelance and being fully like, you eat what you kill. You know, you're just out there drifting alone in the world, and every project you get just buys you a little chunk of time.
Totally.
You know, and that's how. Even though I have the salary now through the college, I still think of my career in kind of those terms. Like I can't leave anything on the table just yet. So that's a deal, man. Yeah, thanks.
Well, baby, that's spectacular, man. I mean, those are all good titles. I think those all play to your strengths too. When I kind of think of like what it is that you do and the kind of writing that you do, and it feels like those those projects actually would kind of like, they would like scratch a particular itch in every different kind of writing that you've done up to this point in some ways, right?
Yeah, most definitely, man. And dude, honest to gosh, if I could only ever do graphic novels with Harvest House again, I would do that.
No kidding. So that was the rest of my career. That you've grown to love.
Oh, dude, so joyful, so fun, not dependent on any other people. Like there's no interviewing. There's no
research.
Waiting around for other people. Yeah, no research. Like I can just kind of let these stories fly out of my head and make them funny. And, you know, there's a real scarcity in the kids book world. And this is actually something I've learned from my pops. So pops he's retired. He was a pilot. He flew corporate jets and he's been retired for a couple of years now. But one of the cool things that he does there in my hometown is they've got this like after school literacy program for kids who are kind of at risk and you know, come from just the kind of backgrounds where they're not getting a lot of reading input, you know, maybe in the home or whatever. But he does this program and it's amazing. And, you know, one of the things he's been telling me for years, he's like, there's no books that like young boys like to read because they're all, you know, they're all these like orcs and warlocks. And if you're not that kind of kid, you're just not going to get into those books. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So it's all fantasy. It's all kind of superhero stuff. And Pops was just like, I wish somebody would write some books about like real kids who are going to school and, you know, having funny things happen to them. And that's exactly what these books
are. That's fascinating. So your pops actually inspired you to write these very like, almost like these very, these like organic in the sense that like a kid can like look at the cover and go, oh, that's me. I can identify with that.
Totally. 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 And yeah, I think the emotions, the situations, there's nothing like super fantastical or made up about them. I mean, they're just things that we go through as kids. And so far they've been really relatable, I think, and pretty well received. So I've enjoyed it, man. That's a fun time.
Well, baby, that's good to hear. I mean, I'm glad to hear that because I know that we, you know, I can attest to having written things that I wrote that carried, you know, probably some level of interest, but if I look back, it wasn't something that was just at the peak of what was my passion. And then, so as you get older, you kind of are more, you kind of want to do more things that really, really kind of hit that passion peak rather than stuff that you're doing just to do, even if it does have some level of interest. And so, man, it's good. It's good to lock into that and find out what those things are as you get older so that you can, you know, cause there's only so much time. You only have so much energy. You have diminishing energy. And so everything you do, you want it to be something that you really, really are excited to get behind and spend some effort in. So that's good to hear.
Absolutely.
That's good to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks.
Well, baby, it's been good talking. And we are, man, we've gotten probably even past our time, even past the normal.
We've gone a while.
The normal happy rant time. So,
baby, time flies when we're together.
It flies. It's like we're back at Cracker Barrel dreaming, talking about the future, talking about the things that were never going to be, but we like talking about them as they were.
Exactly.
And I think one of the things that we did, which is what we do on this program every week, is we like to wander to and fro. And we like to finish even our remote conversations where we would come together at a Cracker Barrel and talk about, you know, the dreams of two young men embarking on a cold, lonely world. And even when we parted back in the day and we would reach the end of our destination, we would finish by looking at each other in the eye and saying, Rachel DeHeld Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I'm Don Hawkins, inviting you to be encouraged with my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You. To subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.